Good morning. I have a very good excuse. I promise. Baruch Hashem, we had a simcha this morning from the shul. Beautiful bris, and from a family who had experienced a lot of tsar in the past. So there are certain simchas that you could leave early, and there are certain simchas that you can't leave early. This was one of the simchas that I could not leave early. I didn't want to leave. I have to be honest, I didn't want to leave early. When you see people who have been through so much get a second opportunity at simcha, it's something that you really have to take advantage of, because it doesn't happen every single day. And when you're privileged to see it, you have to take in the chesed of the Ribono Shel Olam. But I apologize for being inconsiderate with your time. I thought I was going to get here on time. But with that, let's begin. Enough introduction. And thank you for staying. This is Mamish. This is just, a men's shir and a women's shir. Right? So there's not even any refreshments out, and you still all stayed, so thank you. So let's begin. So what I'd like to try to do today is focus a little bit, switch gears just for this week, and go from Perek Shira to Hanukkah. And I'd like to focus you on an incredible insight of Hanukkah. I find that every year I find myself gravitating back towards certain fundamental ideas. So the idea that we're going to talk about today, we've discussed in past years as well, but I'd like to try to kind of bring out a nuanced idea, a new understanding. Let's take a look at number one. So the Gemara says, the great sage Rav holds, Aser lihishtamish la'ora. One of the most important halachos when it comes to Ner Chanukah is that one is not permitted to use the lights. In other words, one cannot get benefit from the Neros Chanukah. I can't use it for luminescent purposes. As the Shulchan Aruch says, I can't count money by it. I can't learn Torah by it. I'm not supposed to get any use from the Ner Chanukah. Okay, that is a concept with which we are all familiar. This concept, of course, gives birth to the idea of the Shamish, the additional, what we'll call ancillary or utilitarian candle, that really serves no inherent purpose other than, of course, to light the other candles, but really primarily it's there so that in the event that I do get some benefit from the light of the menorah, we attribute that benefit not to the mitzvah candles, but we attribute that benefit to the shamish candle, to the ancillary candle. But look at number two. So the Gemara says, after we establish that you cannot get any benefit from the Ner Chanukah, the Gemara says something amazing. Hamadlik Ner Shel Chanukah Tzarech Levarich. If one goes ahead and lights a Ner Chanukah, one is obligated to make a bracha. Okay. Rabbi Yirmiya Amar, Haroa Ner Shel Chanukah Tzarech Levarich. Rabbi Yirmiya says that if one sees a Ner Chanukah, one makes a bracha as well. So the Gemara discusses the idea that if you're lighting the Ner Chanukah, for example, on the first night, we know we make three brachos. The bracha of Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah, the bracha of Sha'asanisim, and the bracha of Shechianu. On the subsequent nights, we take off the Shechianu, we just say Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah and Sha'asanisim. But the Gemara here introduces us to an incredible idea, which is, let's say I'm not lighting a Ner Chanukah. I'm not lighting, for whatever the reason, I'm traveling. This happens, people travel over Chanukah. So again, I'm traveling, so that night that I'm traveling, I'm not going to be at home. My family members aren't going to be at home. What do I do about Ner Chanukah? Now, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, remember again, someone told me, so they were traveling to Eretz Yisrael, they told me they had a great idea that they were going to go to the airport. There was time after they checked in, they were going to go out by the curb and light the menorah there. I said, I'm so impressed with your resolve, right? And your commitment to fulfill the mitzvah, but there's no such concept like that. The mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is a mitzvah in your home. If for some reason, again, you're traveling and you don't have a home that particular night, and family members aren't in the home, on a technical level, you don't have an obligation of Ner Chanukah. If you're traveling and you leave behind family members, they could light on your behalf, and as long as the menorah is lit in your home, you're good to go. You're solid. Even if you're not traveling, you could do that. But there is no concept. If I don't have a home, I don't have to light Ner Chanukah. Comes along the Gemara and introduces an incredible idea. What happens if I'm not going to light Ner Chanukah, but I pass by someone's window, and in their window or by their front door, I see their Ner Chanukah. I see their candle. So the Gemara actually says that one is permitted to make a bracha on someone else's Ner Chanukah. Haroa Ner Shel Chavero Tzarech Levarich. If you see your friend's candle, you see someone else's Ner Chanukah, and again, the caveat over here is you are not going to light on your own subsequently, you are permitted to make a bracha on someone else's Ner Chanukah. Which bracha do you make? Of course, not lahadlik ner, because you're not doing the actual kindling. Rather, the bracha that's being referred to is the bracha of sha'asa nisim la'avosinu bayamim ha'heim bazman hazeh. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for doing miracles for our forefathers in those days, in this time. And the Shulchan Aruch actually codifies this halacha l'maisa as a practical matter. And halacha l'maisa, if you're not going to light the menorah on a particular evening for whatever the reason, and you pass by someone else's lit menorah, you stop, you look, you recite. You don't have to do like the hands over the eyes, like right? But right, you stop, you look, you make the bracha, and again, at least on some level, you have fulfilled the mitzvah. Now, understand from a halachic perspective, this is incredibly perplexing. Take a look at number three. The Imre Emes, who was one of the earlier Ger Rebbes, says something amazing. He points out, what is going on over here? Lo matzinu b'shum mitzvah, sheharoe acherim mekaimim es ha-mitzvah, yuchal varech aleha. Where do we ever find in Jewish law this concept that I have an obligation to do a mitzvah, but if for some reason I can't do the mitzvah, then what? Then what? I could watch you do it and make a bracha over your performance. By the way, can you imagine how much easier Judaism would be if this was in fact true? He gives examples. Kigon, im chavero ochel matzah. Can you imagine this, right? The Seder night. So I don't have to worry about three kizesim in 2.5 minutes, and I could just say, okay, you know what? One of the young people at my table, you have a better digestive tract than I do. Ke gesund, hey, es gesund, right? You go ahead, you eat it up. I'm going to watch you. I'm not going to take my eyes off you the whole time until you swallow. And if you eat the matzah, then I'll make the bracha. Or he gives, for example, sukkah, yoshe basukkah. You may have noticed sometimes in Baltimore, the weather could be a bit unpredictable, right? So sukkis, and it's 95 degrees. It would be wonderful to say, you know what, Chaim Yankel, you drew the short straw, you go out to the sukkah, we're all going to sit in the air-conditioned dining room, look out the window, we're going to keep our eyes on you, of course, you eat in the sukkah, and shalom Yisrael. Where do we ever see a concept like this? In general, again, if a mitzvah is a chiyuv, is an obligation on the individual, that means I have to fulfill it. Now, it's true, if there are circumstances that tell me that I'm exempt, so for example, I'm traveling and I don't have a home, okay, then I'm exempt. But that's not what the halacha is saying. The halacha is telling me that there is a, even though the obligation is upon me, upon the home, if I see someone else doing the mitzvah, I can make a bracha on their candle. So the Imre Emes says, what is going on over here? And he says something so beautiful, but a bit cryptic. If you look at number three, the second line towards the end of the lines, v'hainu taima. So what is the reason that you can make a bracha on someone else's act of kindling? Ki ikar hanes shel Chanukah, hu lifakeach einei ha'ivrim haholchin b'choshech. Says the Imre Emes something so incredibly beautiful. Because the entire essence of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, let's just translate his words. Ki ikar hanes, the primary miracle, is to open the eyes of those who are blind, who walk in darkness. The ikar mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is to open the eyes of those who are blind, who spend their lives walking in darkness. And therefore, says the Imre Emes something amazing. The truth is, the real essence of Ner Chanukah is to what? Is to look at the flame. We're going to talk about this in just a moment. That's really the mitzvah. Now the issue is, I can only look at the flame if what? If I kindle it. Right? You can only eat on Shabbos if you cook on Erev Shabbos. So in order for me to go ahead and look at the flame, I have to kindle it. But the Imre Emes is saying, is that the real essence of the mitzvah, now he's not necessarily talking about on a halachic sense, he's more talking about on a hashkafic sense, that the ikr, the primary aspect of the mitzvah, is not the kindling of the candles, but it's the looking at the candles. It's the looking at the light. And therefore, again, says the Imre Emes, that is why the halacha says that ultimately, again, if you see someone else's candles, you have the ability to make a bracha on their act of kindling. Ah, you didn't kindle it yourself? It's okay. The essence is to look in the flame. Why look in the flame? Because it's the flame of Chanukah that opens the eyes of those who are blind and who spend their lives walking in darkness. And you see this motif expressed in a couple of different places. Look at number four. The Chavas Yair writes, Nirali, de ikar mitzvah, hu sheyihiyah hamadlik etzel hanira, chatzi sha'aliros osam, So the Chavos Ya'ar writes, and this sometimes poses a bit of a logistical challenge, depending on where you light in your home. But sometimes people light the menorah, do their thing, and then go, you know, eat dinner, whatever it is, and the menorah is burning there. So the Chavos Ya'ar says that there's a concept that after you light the menorah, stay there and look at the light. He says stay there for a half hour. And look at his wording. Liro sosam. The goal is to look at the flames. Vilismoach bahem. And to rejoice in the flames. To rejoice with the flames. So you see the same sentiment expressed. It is true that the act of kindling might be the halachic fulfillment of the mitzvah. But the essence of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is to look at the flame. To open my eyes, to take away the blindness, to rejoice with the light. If you take a look at number 5, the Belzer Rebbe writes, Sha'al yidei ha'abata b'neiros, get ready for this, Sha'al yidei ha'abata b'neiros Chanukah, when one looks at the Chanukah lights, shotfim u'mizachachim es ha'neshama mikol pigam v'lichloch. It's an incredible statement. When you look at the lights of the Ner Chanukah, shotfim means it rinses, mizachachim purifies the soul from any type of impurity. Imagine this. That all I need to do is look at the lights of the Ner Chanukah and that habata, that gazing at the lights itself. I'm not doing anything. I'm just standing there staring into the lights. That act of looking at the light of Ner Chanukah cleanses my soul. What does it cleanse my soul of? Well, at least according to the Belzer Rebbe, mikol pigam v'lichloch. What does it cleanse my soul from? What does it cleanse my soul from? Everything. Everything. Mikol pigam v'lichloch. Any amount of impurity, anything that I've met, it purifies everything. So obviously what we begin to see is something a bit dramatic, which is that there's something, not just, I'm saying it mildly, but there's something about looking in the candles. And not just something about looking in the candles, but the essence of the fulfillment of Ner Chanukah. The essence of the Chanukah experience is not captured by latkes, and it's not captured by sufganiyot, and it's not captured by dreidel, although again, each one of those things serves a spiritual purpose in the Yom Tov as well. But the essence of Chanukah is only captured if you stand there and stare into the flames. If you stand there and stare into the flames, what's happening? Apparently, again, my eyes are being opened, the darkness is being dispelled, the blindness is being taken away. My soul is being purified from anything and everything. As long as I just stand there, look, and am besimcha with the flames. The question is obvious, which is, oh, by the way, so just to loop it back, and this finds its expression in halacha as well. That's why the halacha says that if you're not going to light your own menorah on one of the nights of Chanukah, you could actually make a bracha on someone else's menorah. Why? Now it makes sense. Because the essence is not really the kindling. The kindling is the necessary step ultimately to have the flame. But the goal is to be able to gaze into the flames. So if for some reason I can't light my own, I can make a bracha on someone else's kindled flame. The question is obvious. What is this dynamic? Right? What is it about this flame of Ner Chanukah? You know, again, we're no strangers to fire, right? We have Neros Shabbos every single week. We have Neros Yom Tov. Fire and candles play an incredibly important role in general, right? We mark a yard site with the Ner Neshama. There's this incredible connection between the flame, the soul. But Ner Chanukah seems to be something different. No one ever says that if you look into the Neros Shabbos, it cleanses your soul of every single impurity. No one says that if you look into the Neros Shabbos, suddenly again, it takes away the blindness and takes you out of the darkness. There's no statement like that. There seems to be something unique about Ner Chanukah, and we have to understand what it is. So to appreciate this, we're going to go on a few minute tangent. Take a look at number 6. The Torah in Shmos, when discussing the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, says something amazing. The pasuk says, "V'hiktir alav Aaron kitores samim baboker baboker, beitivos haneros yaktirena." So Aaron shall burn the aromatic incense. He shall burn it every morning when he tends to the lamps, and Aaron shall burn it at twilight. Again, "V'alos Aaron haneros bein arba'im yaktirena kitores tamim lifnei Hashem adoroseichem." So what's interesting to note is as follows. The burning specifically of the afternoon ketores. Ketores is incense, was offered up twice during the day. The afternoon kitoras was offered up at the time that the menorah was lit. So you would light the menorah, and then you would go ahead, or I should say, you would offer the kitoras, and then you'd go ahead and light the menorah. So Rabbi Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Rav delivered, Rabbi Soloveitchik did not really commit anything to writing. This was a general hashkafa that the Rav felt that thought is always evolving. By the way, it's not just the Rav. The Baal Shem Tov never committed anything to writing. Rabbi Nachman never committed to anything to writing. Many great Gedolim did not want to commit their thoughts to writing because thought evolves. And the way I see things now might be different than the way I see things in 10 years from now. What's the problem with committing things to writing? Right? Once they're committed to writing, they're there. They're there. Meaning written words cannot change. There's a power to that. There's a beauty to that, but there's reality. So Rav Soloveitchik really didn't write down anything during his lifetime. After he passed away, so many of his drushos and shiurim, which were previously recorded, were then transcribed. That's why, again, even some of the word usages that are there are not necessarily from the Rav himself, but often edited, but the theme is correct. Take a look at number 7. So this, Rav Soloveitchik has a series of essays on Hanukkah and Purim. So he writes as follows. The Rav writes, number 7. At the exact time of Hadlakas Neros in the temple, the incense is burned on the altar. The vapor, the cloud of smoke, rises and saturates the air in the sanctuary. The lights can hardly shine brightly since they have to penetrate the haze. One sees the Neros, but cannot make use of them. The sanctuary is not illuminated because of the impenetrable pillar of incense vapor. One perceives the light, but does not enjoy it. So the Rav says something amazing. Look how the menorah, remember again, Chanukah, the menorah as we light it, is a remembrance, is a zecher to that which was done in the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, the menorah was kindled each and every day in the Beis HaMikdash. We obviously make some significant modifications. We don't use an 8-branched menorah. We only use a 7-branched menorah. Some are careful not even to call it a menorah, because the menorah was the utensil for the Beis HaMikdash. But nevertheless, what we do on Hanukkah is modeled after that which was done in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Rav makes an amazing observation. Imagine this for just a moment. The Kohen Gadol would light the Ketores, he would ignite, he would put up the incense. Now remember again, one of the miracles in the temple is that often the incense smoke would rise up in a straight pillar. The way it worked, says the Rav, is that the smoke of the Ketores would obscure the light of the menorah. So that when you walked into the Beis HaMikdash, the light of the menorah was not clear. It was a hazy light. It was only behind the pillar of smoke. Again, it was there. You were able to make it out. But at the end of the day, like the Rav says, one perceives the light, but does not enjoy it. Now, this is quite intriguing if you think about it, because the Sefer HaChinuch, the Ramban, and others explain that the entire point of the menorah, remember again, the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to be set up like a palace. So it's like a palace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in fact, the role of the menorah was luminescence, was light. Because every palace has to have light. Right? The Aron, the Ark of the Covenant, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Holy of Holies, was to be the throne room of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Shulchan, the table, which contained the Lechem HaPanim, the showbread, was supposed to also represent wealth of the king. Right? Plenty of the king. So it's amazing to see over here that the menorah intentionally had its light obscured. The light of the menorah, again, you could perceive it, but it was really of no active use because at the end of the day it was obscured by the cloud of the ketores. So what's happening here? Shabbos Soloveitchik expounds on this a little bit, and he says, he quotes the pasuk from Tehillim. The pasuk says in number 8, Ner l'ragli dvarecha va'or l'nsivasi. Literally translated, your word is a lamp to my feet, a light for my path. Ner l'ragli dvarecha. So we can leave out dvarecha. Ner l'ragli, your candle is a candle. Your word is a lamp to my feet. V'or l'nsivasi. David HaMelech is referring to two different types of light. There's a ner l'ragli and an or l'nsivasi. So Rabbi Soloveitchik continues in number 9. And he says, the symbolism of the ner, the candle, is in general a double one. Quotes the pasuk from Tehillim, the psalmist said, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. First, the ner is a lamp that illuminates and makes things visible. Second, it is a guide in darkness, but does not dissipate the darkness. So listen to this distinction. The sun illuminates, or a remote star, neither illuminates nor shines. However, it does guide. The star may be 1,000 times bigger and more brilliant than the sun, yet it does not shine because of the enormous distance separating the star from us. It twinkles from a mysterious far horizon, winks to us, and tells us something we don't understand. Second paragraph at number 9. In other words, a candle is at times the symbol of a bright light. At other times, it is a symbol of remoteness, of unlimited stretches, of guidance from afar. Ner Chanukah is a light of the latter kind. It is not lit to illuminate, but to address itself to us from the vast dark spaces, to tell us to move along invisible paths. So the Rav says something so absolutely amazing, which is, to say it a little bit simpler, like in English, you know, there are two types of light. There's a luminescent light. What's the point of a luminescent light? To dissipate the darkness, to see where I'm going. It's a utilitarian light that helps me navigate around. What's an example of that type of light? Ner Shabbos. Right? See, it's harder for us to appreciate this because we live in a time of artificial light. But the real essence of Ner Shabbos is to provide illumination. That's why it is very important to make sure that you derive some type of real light benefit from your Neros Shabbos. They are there to actively provide light. There's a light of illumination. But says the Rav, and that he says is the Ner L'Ragli. That's the light that tells me where to walk. That tells you where to go. But then there's a second type of light, of Or L'Nesiva Si, a light for my path, a light for my path. What's the light for my path? That light does not provide me any type of luminescent benefit. That's like the star. What does the star do for me? So the Rav says the star doesn't actually light up anything in my Dalet Amos, in my immediate space. What the star does, using the word of Rabbi Soloveitchik, it twinkles from a mysterious horizon and tells us something we don't understand. That light, which is far away, tells us something. It's not a light of illumination. It's what we'll call a light of enlightenment. It's a light that conveys a message. There's a light of illumination, utilitarian light, and there's a light of enlightenment that does not necessarily dispel the darkness from right in front of me. Instead, what it does is it conveys a message to me. Look at number 10. Ner Chanukah represents not the sun, the light of which clears the darkness away and sheds a bright light over the earth, over our earth, but a remote star whose beam of light does not dissipate the darkness. From the darkness, a mysterious world twinkles and addresses itself to us. If we were to use the light, so again, before we go on, so Leitchik says, this is Ner Chanukah. This is Ner Chanukah. What's the most important phrase in all of Chanukah? The most important phrase when it comes to the menorah? We sing it in Haneros Halalu. I'm not going to sing it. But ve'ein lanu reshus lihishtameish bohem ela lirosam bilvad. Right? It's part of the song. It's part of the song. It's part of the first thing we say right after we light Neros Chanukah. Ve'ein lanu reshus lishamish bohem. Can't get any benefit. So what am I supposed to do with it? Ela lirosam bilvad. The goal is to look at it. Ner Chanukah is not a light of illumination. Ner Chanukah is a light of enlightenment. Ner Chanukah is the light which conveys to us a message. From the darkness, a mysterious world twinkles and addresses itself to us. If we were to use the light of the Ner Chanukah, it would not satisfy our curiosity. We would turn it into an illuminating light, a harvest moon, instead of a distant light that announces something mysterious without furnishing us the clue to solve that mystery. So the Rav says that the entire essence of Ner Chanukah is like, You ever go outside and you look up at a starry night and you see the stars and you feel overwhelmed by the beauty of nature, but also you feel like there's something bigger that's unfolding all around me. There's a cosmos that's unfolding all around me. You know, often we become, I don't mean egocentric in a bad way. I just mean that often we live lives and we're focusing like on the stuff we have to do, on the responsibilities we have. Very rarely do we think about the cosmos. But if you go outside and you look up at a beautiful starlit night and you see the enormity of the cosmos around you, so you begin to see that there's a much bigger world than just me. And if you're a thoughtful person, you begin to think to yourself, what is my place in all of this? Right? The sky is filled with all of these stars. The earth is filled with all of these people. I am but a face in the crowd, but yet I'm here, which means I'm purposeful, which means I'm meaningful, which means I matter. So how do I matter? What is my meaning? What is my purpose? So the Rav suggests that Ner Chanukah is that Ner. It's that star that twinkles to us, that winks at us from a distance. Does it do anything ultimately again to dispel the darkness right here? No. Because remember again, you have to light your Ner Chanukah in a well-lit room. I've mentioned this before. Although, you know, the paradigmatic setting for Ner Chanukah is the family is gathered around and you're standing around the menorah and the room is dark and everybody's paying attention. Suddenly one person lights the flame and that little bit of light lights up the entire room. And it's mamish out of a scene from like a Jewish Hallmark film, right? And it's beautiful and it's fantastic and it's wonderful. There's only one problem, which is it's asur. Right? You're not allowed to do that. Because again, if you light your Ner Chanukah in a dark room, you're getting luminescent benefit from the Ner Chanukah. That's not the role of Ner Chanukah, just the opposite. The lights are on. This is not a light of luminescence. This is not a light of illumination. This is a light of enlightenment. The goal is I'm supposed to look into that Ner Chanukah and I'm supposed to understand something. The mysteries of life are supposed to become clear. So I'm not going to take a poll. It's already the third day of Chanukah. I'm not going to take a poll how many of us have solved the mysteries of life over the last three nights of Chanukah by looking at the candles. But very often we don't solve the mystery of life because we're not exactly sure what we're looking at, or for that matter, what we're looking for. So Rabbi Soloveitchik ends over here. But what I'd like to try is to take this a bit further. So what is the mystery? Meaning, what is the nature of this mysterious light? What is the, now we've established is, I understand now at least, why I'm supposed to not get light benefit from the candles. I'm just supposed to look at the candles. So I understand, based on what Rabbi Soloveitchik taught me, I understand why I'm supposed to look at the candles. This is not a light of illumination, this is a light of enlightenment. I'm supposed to look at these lights and I'm supposed to understand something. What is it that I'm supposed to understand? So just because of time, I'm going to ask you to skip for a little bit to go to number 19. So there's an amazing Gemara. So we're not going to do this Gemara because you're familiar with this Gemara. This is the Gemara of my Chanukah. It's in this couple of lines that the Gemara, the Talmud tells the story of Chanukah. Bechafei bekislev, so the Gemara tells us that what happens. Look at the second line, number 19. Shekishenichnesu yivanim lehechal, timu kalashmanim shebehechal. You know, ultimately, again, we know that when the Syrian Greeks took over the temple, they defiled everything. They took everything, they defiled everything. So when the Yevanim come in, they also defiled all of the oils. Ukishagavra malchus chashmonai vinitzchum bodku velo matzu ela pach echad shal shemen shayamunach bichosamo shal kohen gadol. And ultimately, again, the Maccabim came in, Chashmonai come back and they find one little cruse of oil, pach echad shel shemen shayamunach bechosamo shel kohen gadol, that had the intact seal of the kohen gadol testifying to its ritual impurity. And you know the story, there was only enough oil to remain lit for one day, miracle occurred and it remained lit for 8 days. You ever wonder to yourself, there's a lot of time and effort spent over one little jug of oil. Meaning, think about this in just a moment. We ate man for 40 years in the desert. What was the Yom Tov? What's the Yom Tov we have to commemorate the man? Exactly. There is no Yom Tov to commemorate the man. Right? We had a miraculous be'er, a miraculous well. Right? What's the Yom Tov that celebrates the miracle of the well that sustained 3.5 million people during their time in the desert? No Yom Tov. Again, some Yom Tovim make a reference to it in the Issa Chamai Masukis, but there's no Yom Tov. Don't get me wrong. I'm impressed with the whole oil miracle thing. Exceptionally impressed by it. But the truth is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does so many things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does so many things, and there have been so many miracles that have happened over the ages. In fact, I would say that if you were to ask me, which is the greater miracle? The military miracle, or ultimately, again, the oil miracle? Personally, I think the military miracle is much greater. The fact that oil burns altogether is a miracle. So that God decided that his oil should burn for 8 days instead of one day, it's miraculous to begin with. But the notion that people, an army that is outnumbered, outmanned, outsorted, could defeat the fiercest fighting force on the face of the earth, It's a supernatural miracle that occurs in the context of the natural world. And yet again, we know in Hanukkah, we make reference to it in davening, but we don't really do anything in the observance of the Yom Tov to commemorate that miracle. Everything is about the oil. Everything is about the oil. Great miracle about the oil. What? And again, this goes back to the Nair. What's so great? Take a look at number 20. Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, in his Sefer Ayin Hayah, says something absolutely beautiful, so simple, yet so profound. Look at the underlying lines. He says, "Aval od yoser amok b'leiv shochein or hanshama Yisraelis." So Rav Kook writes, deep within the heart, deep within the soul, resides, literally again, the spiritual Jewish light. Shesham gonos hakesher hapnimi shala isha Yisraeli. It is there sometimes buried in the recesses of the heart that the kesher hapnimi, the true bond between the Jew and his creator, resides. Hamofia b'chol oz b'chlala uma im ha'emuna ha'ikaris b'shem Hashem Elokei Yisrael. I'm just going to read a few more lines, I won't translate. Ha'v'haratzon ha'chazak v'ha'ne'eratz shelo li'hipard nevez chayem ha'emuna b'chlala. And sometimes, even when the Jew wanders off and chooses a path in life which may not be the desired path, the body could wander, the soul never does. The soul always remains connected. The soul always remains with that kesher pinimi, that inner connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The soul never wanders off. V'zeh ha'olam ha'pinimi ha'yisraeli. Shedugmaso b'soch ha'klal, get ready for this. Hu ha'kohen gadol nichras lefnai v'lefnim. L'sharis v'akodosh v'am. Skip to the M now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines up from the end of number 20, right towards the end line, right after the period. Get ready for this. Otsa ha'pach ha'katon. Shemunach b'chol samo shal kohen gadol. Yo lo yuchlu ha'yivanim litamos. Says Rav Kook something so dramatically amazing. Why are we making such a big deal that the Hashmonaim found one uncorrupted, one untarnished, little jug of oil? Says Rav Kook, because of the metaphoric significance. Because when the Maccabim, when the Hashmonaim walked into the Beis HaMikdash, what did they find? What did they find? They found, you see, we often think that the only problem was that they didn't have oil. That wasn't the only problem. There was an altar to Zeus. By the way, not only was there not oil, you know what else was missing? The menorah was missing. Right? Remember again, the Gemara Maseches Menachos brings down the menorah was made of solid gold. You think the Greeks just left that there? No, the Jews will come back, they'll take it. They took it away. And the Gemara discusses that first they made a menorah out of iron, then out of tin, then out of brass. And then only years later did they ultimately make a menorah out of gold. It took years. It took years to rehabilitate Klal Yisrael. So says Rav Kook, so what's the message with the Pach Shemen? He says the Pach Shemen is a metaphor for the Jewish soul. It's a metaphor for the Jew. Because sometimes the Jew loses his way. And sometimes the Jew loses his way. Understand, even in the Hanukkah story, we're not going to go back, but you'll look back later on in number 19. The Gemara says number 19, the last line in number 19. L'shana acheres kavum. In a subsequent year, they established Hanukkah as Yom Tov. You know what's interesting? Is that one would have thought that when was Hanukkah established as a Yom Tov? When? Right then and there. Right after you see the oil burn for 8 days, I would have thought that that's cause for a Yom Tov right there. They didn't do that. They established Hanukkah's Yom Tov some subsequent year. When? How much later on a subject to dispute? But the Sfasem, the Gereb explains, why did they wait for another year? Because a good part of Klal Yisrael was Hellenized. There was rampant assimilation. You're going to go ahead and make a new Yom Tov when the ranks of Klal Yisrael have been so terribly depleted through Hellenization? Doesn't make any sense. Rebuild a little bit. Rebuild a little bit. You'll make a Yom Tov when it's a bit more logical to make a Yom Tov. Says Rav Kook, sometimes in life we lose our way. Sometimes there are parts of our persona which become assimilated. We lose our way. We lose our identity. We lose our self. We lose our spark. We lose our holiness. And sometimes we look in the mirror and we say to ourselves, you know what? I don't recognize that person anymore. That person who's staring back at me, that's not who I wanted to be. When I was young, this is not where I thought I would be in life. This is not where I thought my life would be. This is not what I thought my personality would be. This is not the person I thought I would become. And we become so down on ourselves. And sometimes, Nebuch, we give up hope on ourselves. Says Rav Kook, when you are tempted to give up hope on yourself, remember one thing. No matter how much the Yevanim, no matter how much life has defiled your personal temple, There is always pach shemen echad munach bechosamo shel kohen gadol. There is always that one uncorrupted cruse of oil. There is always that little reservoir of holiness, that little jug of holiness that still resides in front of you, inside of you. And if you have the courage to find it, and if you have the courage to break the seal and open it up, and if you have the courage to illuminate it, to light it, to kindle it, there is no telling what you can become. Says Rav Kook, that is the miracle of Chanukah. That is the Yom Tov of Chanukah. We're celebrating the fact that God made oil light, remain kindled for 8 days. Shkoyach. I tell you one better. God created the world. Right? God gave me sight this morning. My heart's working this morning. You'll excuse me. That's 10 times better than oil burning for 8 days. I could totally do without that miracle. God, I have some other, if you're open to suggestions, I have some other miracles I would love from you. Truth is, I don't need the oil one. Says Rav Kook, yes, we do. Because it's not the miracle, but it's the message of the miracle. He said when the Chashmonaim walked in and they found the Beis HaMikdash that was ravaged, that was depleted, that was divested of its holiness. But amidst all of that impurity, they found one little jug of pure and holy oil. Says Rav Kook, sometimes we are that Beis HaMikdash. We lose our way. We lose our derech. Sometimes we lose ourselves. To the point that we're beyond recognition. I walk back into my life, I look at myself in the mirror, and I don't recognize the person who is looking at me. And I'm ready to throw in the towel, I'm ready to give up, and I'm ready to say, I'm done. And says Rav Kook, close your eyes, open your heart, start to look, and you will find that there is always one little cruse of oil left. There is always that little jug that still has the seal of the Kohen Gadol on top of it. Because no matter how bad the mistakes we make in life, a Jew can never fully divest him or herself of their holiness. There is still Kedusha which resides inside of us even when we make bad choices. There is still holiness which resides inside of us even when we make some very, very, very poor life decisions. We can mess ourselves up. We can get ourselves into bad situations. But there is always the cruse of holiness that is waiting to be opened, that is waiting to be kindled, and that is waiting to produce luminescent light. That's the miracle of Chanukah. The miracle of Chanukah is not about candles. And the miracle of Chanukah is not about God's ability to make oil last from 1 day to 8 days. The miracle of Chanukah is the ability to dig down deep within yourself to find the holiness that you never even realized you had. To break the seal, open it up, ignite it, and become something incredibly amazing. And then I'll show you something amazing. I know we're right about at the end of our time, but I'll just show you something incredible. If you go back for just a moment to number 11. Go back to number 11. So remember again, here, there's an amazing Gemara. Okay, I'll have to do it just very quickly. So if you take a look at, sorry. Number 11. So the Pasuk says that the first thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in this world was light. Vayar Elokim es ha'or ki tov, vayavdel Elokim bein ha'or ubein ha'choshech. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that the light was good and made a distinction between the light and the darkness. And the Gemara says something amazing. Number 12. The Gemara says, Dom Rabbi Elazar, Or Shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'yom rishon, Adam sofa bo misofa olam vat sofo. The light that God created on the first day was not simply a light of illumination. It was the light that a person could see from one end of the world to the other end of the world. What does that mean? That one person could see from one end of the world to the other. So is it literal? I mean, maybe it could be literal. But also on a deeper level, what that represents is a light of clarity. A light of clarity. When Adam HaRishon was created, when the world was created, the original light that was supposed to envelop this world was a light of clarity. A light that you come into the world, you know what you have to do, and you know what you have to, and you know how you have to do it. But then the Gemara records, "Kevan shenistakel HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'dor ha'mabul." When HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and he saw the generation of the flood, dor ha'flaga, he saw all the bad stuff that man would do. What did he do? Amad v'ganzo mehem. God took back the first light. The first light, the light of the first day, God removed from this world. What did he replace it with? The sun, the moon, and the stars. So this is an incredible idea. At first, there was the light of creation. And the light of creation was a light of luminescence and enlightenment. A person could see from one end of the world to the next. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw what mankind was going to become. He took it back. He took it back. It'll come back in Mashiach, the Gemara says. It's not for now. But I want to show you something amazing. Take a look. Take a look at number 13. The Bnei Yisrael writes something amazing. He says, quotes Rav Pinchas of Karitz, who says, Shebesoch Neiros Chanukah, Gam Kein Tamun Me'or Hagonos. Says Bnei Yisrael something amazing. The light of the Ner Chanukah is the light ultimately again of the first day of creation. It's the light of the first day of creation. The Yerushalmi says, number 14, watch this. Rabbi Levi B'Shem Rabbi Zerab Shloshem V'Sheh Shos Shimsha Osa Oda Shenivreis B'Yom Rishon. So the Yerushalmi says that the light of the first day remained in this world for 36 hours. Whatever that means. 36 hours, the first light remained in this world, so God took it out. And watch this, the Rokeach writes to number 15, V'chein remez lamid vav shos, shim sha'ora b'maase b'reishes asa'or kitov. He says, him lamid vav, kineged lamid vav shos, v'lamid vav neiros. How many candles do we light over the course of Hanukkah? 36. 36, corresponding to the 36 hours that the initial light of creation shined upon this world. Meaning what? That the light of the Ner Chanukah is the original light of creation. And it's the light that inspires us to create and recreate ourselves and our lives. You'll say to yourself, I can't do that. I am who I am. I don't really have the ability to recreate anything. I'm X number of years old. You'll fill in your own blanks. Right? And what? This is the life that I live. This is the person that I am. Says Rav Kook, look at the Ner Chanukah. You can't use it. You can't read by it. You can't learn by it. You can't play dreidel by it. So what can you do with it? You look at it. What am I looking at? Says Rav Kook, you know what you're supposed to be doing when you look at the Ner Chanukah? You're supposed to be looking into yourself. Those candles, that Ner Chanukah, was kindled from one remaining pach shemen, from one little cruse of oil. The rest of the oil was defiled. The rest of the oil was tainted. The rest of the oil was no longer usable. But there was one little jug of oil left, says Rav Kook. When we look at the menorah and we look at those flames, it's not a light of enlightenment. Excuse me, it's not a light of illumination. It's a light of enlightenment. What's the enlightenment? What's the great mystery that the Rav was telling us about? The light of enlightenment. What's the enlightenment? I too have my cruse of oil. I too have my jug of oil. No matter how bad I've messed up in life, no matter how many wrong turns I have made, I can right the ship. I can take the wheel. Because deep inside of me, no matter how many jugs of oil have been defiled, there is at least one left with the seal of the Kohen Gadol. There is the oil of holiness inside of me. There is the oil of goodness inside of me. And if when I look into the Ner Chanukah, that gives me the courage to look deep inside myself, find my spiritual potential, find my oil, crack open the seal, pour it into the menorah, and light it up, and create beautiful spiritual luminescent light. The 36 candles of Ner Chanukah is the original light of Bereshis. It's the light of creation. Or for us, it's the light of recreation. Because comes every single Chanukah, we remind ourselves that we can remake ourselves if we choose. We can better ourselves if we choose. We can elevate ourselves if we choose. You can't say your personal Beis HaMikdash has been ransacked. There's still a Pach Shaman. Might not be visible. Might be under layers and layers of rubble. But if you find the courage to move away the rubble, you'll find your little jug of oil. And now coming full circle, with this I'll conclude. Coming full circle, now I begin to understand why it is that halacha lemaisa, if I can't light my own Ner Chanukah, I can make a bracha on yours. Because the essence is seeing the light. Because when I see the light, I'm reminded of the historical jug of oil. And when I'm reminded of the historical jug of oil, I'm reminded of the present personal jug of oil. The Chashmonaim illuminated their times, their darkness. I could illuminate and better myself as well. And now I begin to understand the Imre Emes, the Chavos Yoer, the Belzer Rebbe, that when you just look into the candles, you purify your soul. Why? Because there is nothing more powerful in life than the realization that you have your own personal oil. There is nothing more powerful in life than the realization that no matter how many bad turns you have made, there is still a beautiful, pristine cruise of oil that is sitting in your soul waiting to be discovered. When you look into the candles and you realize that, says the Belzer Rebbe, that by itself purifies the soul from anything and everything. And this is the incredible power and the incredible energy of Chanukah. We fulfill the mitzvah by kindling the candles, but we really experience Chanukah by finding our cruse of oil. So the good news is, it's only the third day of Chanukah. So even if you say, wow, I never knew that this was Chanukah before, the great news is, Baruch Hashem, 5 more days. A person could change the world in an hour, let alone what we could do in 5 days. As we are Zoche Miratz Hashem to gaze upon the lights of the menorah, may we first of all be inspired of the miracles of yesteryear, but more important, may we be privileged to make miracles of our own by finding our personal cruse of oil, opening it up, and creating the beautiful spiritual luminescence of life accomplishment.